welcome to TorpCast episode 37, OscarCast. I can guarantee we will not be discussing Oscar the Grouch. We cannot afford his appearance fee. We will not be discussing Oscar Madison from The Odd Couple, nor Oscar Goldman from The $6 Million Man. Our Oscar is endowed with 13 inches of gold-plated titanium, a pewter-like alloy. No, it's not Ron Jeremy. It's the Academy Award. And the Oscar goes to James Caswell, executive producer of TorpCast and man nominated for Best Jock in a Supporting Role.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, co-executive producer of Twerps and the first official Avatar fan who hasn't lost his mind and tried to move to Pandora or paint himself blue. Welcome to our third annual OscarCast, where we will look at the various nominees for this year's Academy Awards, give our picks on who we think should win, who we think will win, and in general discuss the movies from the past year.
Well, Jim, this year's Academy Awards sees a change to the system that we haven't seen since 1943. In 1943, Jack Benny was the host, and it was the last time the Academy nominated 10 pictures for the Best Picture role.
Yes, in 1943, the nominees were Casablanca, For Whom the Bell Tolls, Heaven Can Wait, The Human Comedy, In Which We Serve, Madame Curie, The More the Merrier, The Oxbow Incident, The Song of Bernadette, and Watch for the Rhine. Of course, the winner was Casablanca. How do I know this? Because, as many of our listeners know, I'm a big dork.
A lot of people know that, Jim. You know, it's off topic, but I realized by listening to that list that at least half of those movies are still considered classics to this day.
It makes you kind of wonder, in another 60 years, how many of the movies that are on this list are going to be considered classics.
My guess is it's Avatar, and it's because of dorks like us that it's going to stay that way.
I can tell you one movie that it won't be, A Serious Man, but more on that later.
What do you think about the change to the system?
Well, the change has its plus sides and its negative sides. By expanding the Best Picture list from 5 to 10, it expands the list to allow for more than just the artsy-fartsy films. In the past, some big blockbuster movies get passed over because of the fact that the Academy, by its nature, is dedicated more towards the art films than the blockbusters. For example, last year, The Dark Knight came out. It was on my list of best movies of the year. It was on a lot of people's lists of best picture for the year. Yet it did not get nominated for best picture of the year because they wanted to nominate such movies as Slumdog Millionaire, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Frost Nixon, Milk, and The Reader. If the list had been expanded to 10 last year, it's almost certain that The Dark Knight would have been on that list at that point. So it gives other movies besides the art films a chance for nomination for Best Picture. The downside to this, however, is that with them only nominating 5 directors, it's still very clear who the top 5 Best Picture nominees are. If the director doesn't get nominated for Best Director, it's a pretty sure sign that it's probably not going to win for Best Picture.
So basically what you're saying is that the Best Picture and Best Director normally would go together.
Most of the time that happens. There are a few cases where Best Director and Best Picture are not one and the same. The last time that happened was in 2005, where Crush won Best Picture, but Ang Lee won Best Director for Brokeback Mountain. It does happen. It doesn't happen that often. And yes, I'm that big of a dork. I have that type of information at the touch of a finger. Some of the other negative sides to this is people within the Academy Awards community are concerned that if they were to expand all of the categories to 10 nominees rather than the standard 5 nominees, that it would make for an even longer show. I don't have a problem with that. I wouldn't mind if it was a 6-hour show, but I'm not your average Academy Awards viewer, and B, this isn't the Super Bowl. They don't get Super Bowl money for advertisers. They would love for the Super Bowl to go 6-8 hours so that they can charge humongous fees for running commercials. They can't do that for the Academy Awards, therefore there's not a lot of profit for them to have the show running beyond 3-4 hours. And any time that it does go over, which is every year, the network has a little bit of a conniption fit because they're not making extra money for that time that it runs over. It's all about the money.
Or, as a previous Oscar winner would say, show me the money.
Now, the direct flip side to the plus side is that by filling 10 slots, they gave us films that probably shouldn't have been nominated. There are some years that you could easily pick off 10 really, really good movies that deserve a nomination. There are other years that you're going to be scraping the barrel to get 5.
Kind of a side thought on this. One of the things that kind of is my pet peeve about Oscars is there seems to be certain movies out there that are written and filmed to be Academy nominees. And I guess what I'm saying is the way I look at motion pictures is the stars and the studios are making the motion pictures really to make money, just as you said. It's all about the money, but something that will draw the audiences. When it comes to Oscars, they're making these films for each other to say, this is what I'm capable of. Look at me up on screen.
Look what I can do.
Yes, it feels very much like that. And I think that's kind of trite. And so I think we get this artificial, my movie's better than your movie. And yes, they do applaud one another and they do congratulate one another. But I don't think it's more like they're making films for entertainment as they're making films for the Oscar.
You hit the nose right on the head. During the summertime, they release movies for the audience because they want to make money. They want to get butts in the seats. In November, they release movies to impress one another. They don't care how much money the movie makes, just so long as they get the Oscar nom.
I was watching E! Entertainment today, and they had on an actress give her 5 best movies of all time. And the first 4 were like these classic movies. It was Casablanca and Citizen Kane and movies with real impact. And her number 1 movie of all time was The Reader.
Oh my God.
And I just could not understand that, because The Reader was not a movie meant for the audiences. It's not a mass appeal story.
It's a horrendous story. So tell me, while they were filming this segment, did you actually see the light fall from the ceiling and hit her in the head before she said number 1?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, they cut that part out.
Yes.
Okay.
But I look at that, and the only thing in my mind that I can reconcile that with is The Reader was a movie that must have been filmed for other actors. That they were looking at Kate Winslet's performance. They weren't actually looking at the movie that was made, but the performances and the artsiness of it, because that's really not a good movie.
Yes, I forced myself to sit through The Reader last year. And while it wasn't Highlander the Source bad, I'd still like my 2 hours back.
I have to tell you, when I look at this year's list, I could not force myself to watch most of these movies. I want my movies to be entertaining. And yes, I joke about I want car chases, explosions, and gunfights, but really what I'm saying is I want to be entertained. If I'm going to spend that 2 hours with my butt in the seat, I want to feel good when I come out of the movie theater. And good doesn't necessarily mean it has to have a happy ending. Good just means I have to be, like, wowed. And I looked at the list of the 10 nominees for this year, and I was underwhelmed.
I can look at this list, and I can see 7 or 8 of them that I can understand why they are there. And we'll go into this in a little bit more detail later on. But it really does feel like they threw in another 3 just so that they could round it out to a nice even 10. And if that's what you're doing, if you're throwing them in just so that you can make sure that you have a nice round number, that's very monkish of you, and I can appreciate that. But maybe we need to go with just the movies that deserve to be nominated. If that particular year, 4 movies really deserve to be nominated, then nominate 4 movies. If 14 movies really deserve to be nominated, nominate 14 movies. Don't feel locked in that we have to get 5 or we have to get 10. Nominate however many actually deserve a nomination.
This would not be very hard to do. There's a finite number of people that are in the Motion and Picture Academy. Just set a level of how many votes each picture has to get, whatever it is, 500. If they get 499 votes, it could be a great movie, but it doesn't get nominated. I pulled that number out of my you-know-where, but I think you understand the point.
So, that being said, let's actually talk about the nominees for 2009. Let's start out with Best Supporting Actress. This year's nominees are Penelope Cruz for 9, Vera Farmiga for Up in the Air, Maggie Gyllenhaal for Crazy Heart, Anna Kendrick for Up in the Air, and Monique for Precious.
At least I feel this list of 5 is a lot better than the Best Picture list. Here are people that I actually would like to see win the Oscar. Penelope Cruz is probably one of my favorite actresses of all time. I love the work that Maggie Gyllenhaal has been doing. This is really hard.
Well, I didn't get a chance to see Nine. I didn't get a chance to see Crazy Heart. And I chose not to see Precious, only because it just didn't appeal to me. I saw Up in the Air, thought it was a very good film. I thought both actresses did a very good job. The thing that I had to ask, though, is, and I'm going to be referring back to this on a regular basis throughout this broadcast, the best job of acting should entail acting. How much do I think that this is just an actor who is portraying a part, and how much of this is forgetting that there's an actor and fully believing in the character? Both Vera and Anna did a great job, but they were actors portraying a part. I didn't feel as though it was just the character on the screen. I saw the actresses and I went, okay, those are decent actresses. They did a good job. I'm also going to take into consideration the fact that Monique, while not known for her dramatic acting, from everything that I've heard, Monique did an excellent job in Precious. So much so that she was the winner of the Screen Actors Guild Award. So my pick is going to be Monique. Even though I didn't see the film, from everything that I've heard, and because she won the SAG Award, she's going to be my pick.
I agree with your comment about what the Oscar should be is a person who had the best performance. The Oscar should go to the person who had the best performance, who you really lose yourself in that role, and you don't see the actor anymore, you just see that character. I agree with that. I think realistically that everybody knows there's a lot of politicking that goes on for the Oscars.
Oh, most definitely. I will not argue with that. See my comment earlier about the Dark Knight not even getting nominated.
As I said, I'd love to see Penelope Cruz or Maggie Gyllenhaal get it, but I really think it's going to go to Monique. I think that she is the person most deserving of the Best Supporting Actress this year.
Our Best Supporting Actor nominees this year are Matt Damon for Invictus, Woody Harrelson for The Messenger, Christopher Plummer for The Last Station, Stanley Tucci for The Lovely Bones, and Christoph Waltz for Inglourious Basterds.
This is one of those lists of people where I'm having a hard time separating the actor from the politics. If I just look at the list, I'd almost be willing to go, okay, we can knock Christopher Waltz off that list because he simply isn't in the category of those other actors.
Of course, if you're going to go with the politics of things, you can also knock Woody Harrelson off the list because he's already won one.
Oh, I'd give it to Woody Harrelson for 2012. He was an awesome nut job.
Yes, but that movie wasn't nearly artsy-fartsy enough.
There's a lot of things that movie wasn't enough of.
Good, entertaining, well-written, accurate.
Hey, it made money. What can you say? It entertained a lot of people, so I can't say it was a bad movie. I just can't in good conscience say it was a good movie. Matt Damon's got an Oscar, Woody Harrelson. This is an amazing group of people.
Again, of this list, the only movie that I saw was Inglourious Basterds. And while I've heard that Matt Damon was great, I've heard that Christopher Plummer was great, I've heard that Stanley Tucci was great, the other thing that I've really heard is that Christoph Waltz won the SAG Award for Inglourious Basterds. I'm going to go with Christoph Waltz. He was phenomenal as the Nazi commander. He really made you hate him. He was smooth, he was debonair, he was ruthless, he was vicious. And he was everything that you would expect a villain to be. I have absolutely no problem with Christoph winning the Oscar for this one.
I'm going to have to go with the same choice. I just look at overall who the people are, what the movies they were in. Speaking as a statistician, I think statistically he's the most likely choice.
Moving on to Best Actress, the nominees are Sandra Bullock for The Blind Side, Helen Mirren for The Last Station, Carey Mulligan for An Education, Gabri Sidibe for Precious, and Meryl Streep for Julie and Julia.
Well, here's the first one, and even though this is a great list of actresses, that I really don't have to think about at all. Sandra Bullock. She is America's sweetheart, and I just don't see how she can't win this.
You stole the words right out of my mouth. Sandra Bullock is America's sweetheart. Even when she makes a real stinker of a movie, she's still loved. This is her first opportunity to be in something where her acting not only shines, but that she stands out of the ensemble as being a really good performance. She plays essentially a Southern Belle, but what she does with that performance is incredible. I really don't think that if they had put anyone else in that role, that they could have done nearly as good of a job with it, and that it would have been nominated for Best Picture. She really carries this movie. I have no doubt in my mind that she's going to win Best Actress. If nothing else, then this is the first time she's done something that they can finally give her an award for. They've been wanting for years to give her an award. She just hasn't given them anything to award her with.
Well, what about Steve?
Like I said, she hasn't done anything.
I don't think I can add a lot to your thoughts about Sandra. She is a marvelous actress. People love her. And I think that goes for other actors and actresses to the man on the street. People love Sandra Bullock. And I believe she really does deserve this award.
She is so much America's sweetheart that she was able to go on out and marry one of the bad boys of Hollywood, Jesse James. And it didn't diminish her reputation at all. In fact, it improved his reputation. That is how much she's loved in Hollywood. Now, this is not to say that Helen Mirren is not a great actress. She is. Meryl Streep gets nominated almost every freaking year. She's a great actress. But both of them get nominated almost all the time. It's not that big of a deal for them to get nominated. It is a big deal for Sandra to get nominated. The nominees for Best Actor include Jeff Bridges for Crazy Heart, George Clooney for Up in the Air, Colin Firth for A Serious Man, Morgan Freeman for Invictus, and Jeremy Renner for The Hurt Locker.
Can't we just share the Oscar? First 2 months of the year, Jeff Bridges can have it. The next 2 months, George Clooney can have it. Here is a great list of actors really at the top of their talent.
This is a nice category. I honestly believe that if Jeff Bridges hadn't done such a phenomenal job in Crazy Heart, this would have been a year that would have gone to Morgan Freeman, just because Morgan Freeman is such a phenomenal actor.
Honestly, in my pick, those are the two that it's hardest to choose between, is Jeff Bridges and Morgan Freeman. Even as I'm looking at the list, I'm having trouble deciding, because Jeff just gives a performance of his life. And Morgan Freeman, when has he ever given a bad performance? I mean, you could argue maybe on The Electric Company, but I don't think so.
No, he was even great on The Electric Company. I'm going to go back to what I said earlier about acting. George Clooney was great in Up in the Air, but George Clooney was playing George Clooney. The character of George Clooney was a guy who was against marriage, believed in having fun, doing what needed to be done, but enjoying life. That is George Clooney. He wasn't playing a part. He was just putting George Clooney up on the screen. Not to say that he did a bad job. It was a role that was literally made for him. Jeremy Renner was very good in The Hurt Locker, but again, I felt like Jeremy Renner was playing Jeremy Renner. It didn't feel like he was really acting. Morgan Freeman, like you said, is just phenomenal in everything that he does. Morgan Freeman as Nelson Mandela was better than Nelson Mandela as Nelson Mandela. That's just the nature of Morgan Freeman. But, as you said, Jeff Bridges had the role of a lifetime, and you have to acknowledge that. You have to give him the award for, if nothing else, being lucky enough to find the role of his lifetime and honor it by giving him the award. That, and he was the SAG winner.
That role of a lifetime thing doesn't always work. Now, I hated The Wrestler, but that was still Mickey Rourke's performance of a lifetime.
I think it could almost be argued that that was the role that was the jumper cables for his career. It got him restarted. I don't necessarily think that he's had his role of a lifetime yet. I'm hoping that he actually does something even better than The Wrestler.
Movie-wise, that's not going to be so hard. Performance-wise, maybe a little more difficult. Right now, I feel that the Oscar really belongs to Morgan Freeman. That's whose home it should be sitting in. And if I'm actually trying to do a prediction, I'm having trouble reconciling that with the fact that, yes, Jeff Bridges did win the SAG Award, and I don't know if he's got too many more Crazy Hearts left in him.
Yeah, that really is the question. Is he going to do anything better than this down the line? I honestly think that Morgan Freeman still has great movies ahead of him. And as you said, there is some politics involved. Sometimes they look at the nominees and say, are they going to ever have anything better than this? Is this going to be our opportunity to acknowledge his lifetime of achievement by giving him an Oscar for this film? Morgan Freeman is going to have great movies in the future. I'm not so sure about Jeff Bridges.
I'm 100% certain that as long as Morgan Freeman is going to act, he's going to find roles that are spectacular. Jeff Bridges, I'm going to see Tron Legacy. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. But I have no doubt in my mind that that's no Crazy Heart. So I'm going to have to do one of my splits. The person I want to win, the person I feel it belongs to, is Morgan Freeman. The person I think it's really going to go to is Jeff Bridges.
We did a little bit of jumping around today, so we're going to jump back down to the bottom of our list and discuss Best Animated Film. And the reason we're taking it in this order will become apparent in a moment. The nominees are Coraline, The Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Princess and the Frog, The Secret of Kells, and Up.
I would be so shocked if this does not go to Up. Seems like if Pixar has a movie, the Academy Award's going to go to the Pixar movie. Coraline, I had really high hopes for, and I had the hardest time since it. I love Neil Gaiman. I'm reading one of his books right now. That was just a piss-poor movie. Fantastic Mr. Fox, you couldn't pay me to go see. Princess and the Frog, I would like to see Disney back at the top of their game. I don't know if they're there yet, but I would love to see it. And I don't really know Secret of the Kells, but I'm pretty sure that it can't compete with Up.
Up was a very enjoyable film, and I fully believe that out of this list, it deserves to win Best Animated Film. I do not believe that it warrants a Best Picture nomination. The last animated film that was nominated for Best Picture was Beauty and the Beast. Up is no Beauty and the Beast. That being said, it's a great animated film. It definitely deserves to win. It is my pick for Best Animated Film. Coraline was fine. It was nothing groundbreaking, but it was enjoyable. The Princess and the Frog, as you said, it's not Disney at the top of its game.
I'm going to use your exact same analogy. This is a good movie, but it's no Beauty and the Beast.
I'm waiting for them to get to the point where they're achieving Beauty and the Beast type level.
About Up, this is an interesting situation. I sort of think it deserves a Best Picture nomination, and of the 10 listed, it's in my top 3. As a motion picture, I think Up is the best Pixar movie. I think it has the best characterization, the best dramatization, the best overall story arc of all of the movies. That being said, if you compare it to something like Toy Story or Cars, it's not in that same feeling. Those are clearly kids' movies that are family-friendly. Up, I don't think, was actually meant for kids. It is a really adult story. It took every ounce of might for me to not cry when the wife dies. That was a real Old Yeller moment for me. As a piece, it really is Pixar's finest work. Obviously, it really deserves the Best Animated Picture. And I do think it deserves the nomination for Best Picture. If we were back on the 5 list, I would have put it in the top 5. Up is a good, good movie. I don't think it actually deserves Best Motion Picture of the Year, but if you had the best Pixar movie, that's what I call it.
That being said, it transitions well into our Best Picture and Best Director discussion. Our Best Director nominees are James Cameron for Avatar, Catherine Bigelow for The Hurt Locker, Quentin Tarantino for Inglourious Basterds, Lee Daniels for Precious, and Jason Reitman for Up in the Air. Our Best Picture nominees are Avatar, The Blind Side, District 9, and Education, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Precious, A Serious Man, Up, and Up in the Air. As we discussed before, the 5 obvious Best Picture nominees are Avatar, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Precious, and Up in the Air. The other 5 got added, but I don't know if they really stand a chance.
No, honestly, I don't think so.
I want to discuss the 5 that aren't in the running.
All right.
Let's do a quick synopsis on those 5. The Blind Side, as I said, a great performance by Sandra Bullock. It was a feel-good movie. It's based on a real-life story. It shows the struggles of an inner-city kid who really has everything going against him, but is given a break and is enabled to have his real talents shine forth. And he becomes greater than he would have ever been able to become, thanks to the support and generosity of the Tui family. Great story, great performance, but if they hadn't expanded out to 10, I don't think it would have been on this list. In fact, I know it wouldn't have.
Feel-good pictures, I like them, but they have a real hard time at the Academy. If I could take the next one, this actually is a complete shocker to me, District 9. When has the Academy ever recognized two science fiction pictures in one year?
I can't think of there ever being a time where they've acknowledged two in one year.
Oh, that's a great word, acknowledged. Most of the time, even the greatest science fiction pictures ever made, just let's not talk about them. They're a genre movie. Having seen District 9 and thoroughly loving it, I think it was a bit overrated.
It was very overrated.
I was trying to be kind. It's a good movie. I like the story. I like the actor. I really like District 9.
Unfortunately for me, most of the characters that I really liked in that movie were CGI, and I couldn't understand them.
Yeah.
No, that was the actors.
I like District 9. I would like to see more of this type of movie out there. I'm not like the Academy Award nut. I don't care if a movie has won an award. I don't care if an actor has won an award. It's a little bit fun to talk about, but I don't think it really makes or breaks performance. I think Dark Knight is an excellent example. For that movie, I don't care if it didn't win Best Picture. I don't care if it didn't win Best Director. I still think that was one of the best movies of the year. Doesn't need the awards. There are plenty of other movies out there that have won the Oscar that I will never see. That being said, I don't think District 9 belongs on this list.
I believe that District 9 does belong on the list, and this is one of the ones that I'm glad that it got expanded out for, because it never would have gotten the nomination if they hadn't expanded out to 10. As I said, I wasn't overly enthused with the performances. The direction was okay, but as far as a way of doing filmmaking, I think that this was a pioneer. The interaction between CGI and real-life environments, it's been done before, but this had a whole new feel to it. As I said in jest, but in another way, it's also very accurate, the characters that I cared about the most were the CGI characters. They were the ones that really drew me into the story and made me go, oh, I wonder what's going to happen to them next. That is pioneer for me. And in that particular case, I'm very glad that it got nominated.
I like this movie more as a genre piece, and I'd love to spend a couple hours talking about genre pieces. What I was most impressed with, and what means the most to me, is the fact that District 9, a little low-budget foreign movie, is standing up against Avatar, this $250, $300 million behemoth of a sci-fi show. So here you got this little dinky budget movie, which people around the world love. And I think it's really got to show producers and directors that you don't have to make an Avatar to make a good genre movie. Some of my favorite work of all time is Rod Serling, and I'm reasonably certain there's nothing he ever made that cost more than $1 million. And he's one of the best genre storytellers of all time.
The next one on that list is An Education. And I did sit down and watched it because it was a Best Picture nominee. I wouldn't have watched it under any other circumstances. And when I say that the Oscars normally nominate movies that are artsy-fartsy films, this is the artsy-fartsy film that was nominated strictly because it's an artsy-fartsy film.
It was an education in how to waste 2 hours of your life.
The story revolves around a 16-year-old girl who is far too sophisticated and wants to be worldly than her peers and, frankly, for her own good, who meets up with a 30-something man who is willing and able to show her the life that she thinks that she wants. And it's an excellent example of pedophilia at its worst.
I still think that was Phantom of the Opera, but that's just me.
It is extremely predictable, to the point where about 5 minutes into the film, I knew how it was going to end. Every archetype available is used, and it's predictable from the very beginning to the very end. It's exactly what the hoi polloi's are looking for in entertainment, and it's the exact opposite of what people like Doug and myself consider entertainment.
Speaking of the exact opposite of what I would consider entertainment, can we discuss A Serious Man for a very short period of time?
It sucked.
All right, moving on.
No. I think we should say just a couple more things about it. A, it was a Coen Brothers movie. Therefore, I knew it was going to suck before I ever ran a single frame of film. Yes, I know that they've won Best Director. Yes, I know that they've won Best Picture a couple of times. Both of those movies that won Best Picture were horrible. I could not sit through them. I got up in the middle of both of them and walked out. So at least we're holding to pattern because I only saw half of A Serious Man. Then I had to shut it off and walk away. they have done exactly one movie that I enjoyed, and that was Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Which was kind of a piece of brilliance, if you ask me. I really like that movie.
That was a rare star in their crown of dog turds. They're considered to be black comedies, and maybe it's just me, but part of it being a black comedy means that there should be something funny in it. There is no humor in these movies, from what I can tell. All of the characters are just boring. When I sit there and I go, you know, I could watch the rest of this movie, but I know it's just going to be as boring as the first half. And why should I bother? There is no hope for this. I mean, even Highlander the Source, we sat there and went, oh God, this is bad. But there might be a slight hope or chance that it could get better.
We were wrong.
We were desperately wrong. But there was at least a hope of it.
Yes. If you want that kind of a headache, get yourself a brick and hit yourself in the head with it.
Do you get the feeling yet that we don't like the Coen brothers? Fortunately, though, by looking at the Best Director list, at least it wouldn't have been nominated for Best Picture if it wasn't expanded out to the 10. This above all the other movies. Every other movie on this list, this one above them, is the one that I think they threw in there just because they wanted to hit 10.
I have one last comment, and it's going actually back to something that you said earlier. One of the ways when I judge my interest in a movie is by watching the trailer. I think that's why they exist. When you have a comedy, I expect the trailer to show enough funny scenes that you laugh during the trailer. Doesn't always mean that the movie is going to be enjoyable, but there should be some sort of a story with a humorous ending that you can put into the trailer and say, okay, that made me laugh. Maybe the movie will make me laugh. When I saw the trailer for A Serious Man, I wanted to cry. That's really where I personally would leave A Serious Man.
And we've already discussed Up. So let's move on to those that got the Best Director nods. As I said, Up in the Air, good film, enjoyable, might have stood an ounce of a chance if it wasn't up against these four other movies. If this was up against, say, A Serious Man, An Education, and District 9, I would go, oh, most definitely, please, give this one the Oscar. But in comparison to the stuff that it is actually up against, it really doesn't stand a chance. Again, Precious, heard great things, did not get a chance to see this one, so I can't really make a judgment call on it. I've been a career-long fan of Quentin Tarantino's, so it is so nice to see him nominated for Best Director again. I enjoyed Inglourious Basterds. I don't necessarily think that it is one of his best jobs as a director, but it was very enjoyable. And again, if it wasn't up against Avatar and The Hurt Locker, I'd be rooting for it. The problem is that it is up against Avatar and The Hurt Locker, and it doesn't stand a chance.
When I look at the Best Director list, I see a couple of things. Quentin Tarantino, who is, I want to call him kind of the opposite, or maybe like 15 degrees off of America's Sweetheart. His movies do so well, and people love what he does. I'm wondering if this is just Quentin Tarantino's year. Okay, you know what, we've put it off long enough, let's just give it to him because he deserves it. Given the list that Jim gave earlier, I would say, yeah, Inglourious Basterds would be at the top of that list. This list also has Avatar and Hurt Locker on it. Avatar is, in my opinion, a 4-star movie. It has some of the best performances, some of the best acting, certainly the best CGI that I have ever seen in my life. This is an absolutely incredible movie and will probably be in my top 10 favorite science fiction movies of all time. I look at this as kind of the opposite of Quentin Tarantino. This is not James Cameron's year. As much money as this movie has made, as much as people enjoy this movie, and as much as it revolutionized 3D, I don't see people thinking this is the next Titanic. I really kind of look at The Hurt Locker. I look at how many nominations it has. Just everything that I could see tells me this is a Hurt Locker year.
I agree that it is down to Avatar and The Hurt Locker. As much as I love Quentin Tarantino's work, these other three nominees just don't even stand a chance. They're coming just to look good in tuxedos.
I could see a surprise upset here. Honestly, my first thought on the surprise upset really is Quentin Tarantino, for exactly the reasons I said. I would like to know if there are people who just think this is his year. My second thought on that is Precious, and that's basically just because of how many great performances Lee Daniels got, the sheer reaction to this movie. I could really see Precious coming in as the surprise underdog. I wouldn't mind seeing Precious as a surprise underdog. But I just look at the Hurt Locker as the real... If I were a betting man, that's where I'd put my money.
Well, I'm going to resort back to the numbers. Avatar was the People's Choice Award winner, which is no surprise. Catherine Bigelow's The Hurt Locker was the Directors Guild Award winner. That being said, I'm actually going to say that this is going to be our tiebreaker. I am picking Avatar as the Best Picture winner. But I think this is going to be one of those rare years where Best Picture and Best Director are not going to be the same. And I'm going to say that Catherine Bigelow is going to win Best Director for The Hurt Locker. They don't usually split them like that. It happens very rarely, but I think this is going to be the year that happens. There is no way that they are going to be able to ignore the fact that Avatar has finally knocked that stupid boat movie off the top of the list. They are not going to be able to ignore the fact that it has grossed the most amount of money in history. They are going to give it Best Picture. If they do not, if you consider the fact that Titanic won Best Picture the year that it was available for nomination, they have to give it to Avatar this year. But James Cameron did win for Titanic. I don't think he's going to win for Best Director this year. I think it's going to go to his ex-wife, Catherine.
I agree completely that Best Director is going to Catherine. And I agree completely with your logic. And it's going to be difficult not to sell Avatar as the best motion picture. I agree with your logic in there. I'm going with an emotional choice, not a logical choice. And that would be Hurt Locker.
That is very, very weird that we have actually managed to agree on everything but Best Picture. And in reality, we agree on Best Picture. It's just you're using one side of the brain and picking Hurt Locker, and I'm using the other side of the brain and picking Avatar. Okay, so those are our picks. To round things out, let's discuss best movie picks and worst movie picks of 2009. I agree with you. Avatar was a fantastic movie. This is one of those rare years where the Best Picture Oscar is going to go to the Best Picture of the year. I know that you loved Avatar a lot more than I did. I probably would give it 3.5 out of 4, but that's because...
You didn't see it in 3D. When you see it in 3D, you're going to give it that other half a star.
Yeah, I actually went the cheap route. I went and saw it 2D because I wanted to judge it just for the story, not as a special effects extravaganza. So when I say that I give it 3.5 out of 4, that is judging it strictly on the story. While the story had a lot of the traits of a standard James Cameron science fiction film, in other words, the government is bad, big business is bad, that type of mentality, the way he told his story was very entertaining, and it was a good story.
Really? You missed a part of it by not seeing 3D. A motion picture, by its definition, is the moving pictures. And you only saw a portion of what he filmed, a portion of what was CGI'd. In my opinion, Pandora the World is actually the unsung character in the movie. And by actually being immersed in that, in the actual environment, when you see the 3D, and you can see the individual blades of grass, and it feels like you're in the trees, that you miss that character being in 2D.
That being said, The Hurt Locker was also a great movie. As opposed to being a special effects extravaganza, Bigelow takes a current hot topic and tells a story that is not really politically motivated. She is telling about the struggles of these soldiers, these bomb specialists, who on a day-to-day basis take their lives into their own hands, and every morning when they get up, they know that it could be their last day on Earth. And she delves into the psychological ramifications of this and deals with what that is going to do to an everyday person having to be in that type of a situation day in and day out. And it doesn't matter if it's in the Afghan war, it doesn't matter if it's a firefighter, it doesn't matter if it's a police officer. All these people have to do this very same thing all the time. She just chose the war in Afghanistan as her medium to tell this very dramatic, very moving story. Everybody knows that Doug and I are big sci-fi fantasy buffs. If Doug and I were to list off our top 10 movies of all time, money is going to be on the fact that at least 8 or 9 of them are going to be science fiction films. That being said, this dramatic film was right at the top of my list. It is such a tight race between Avatar and The Hurt Locker. It's not even funny. I really wish that they could give out 2 Oscars for Best Director and 2 Oscars for Best Picture and give both of them the awards.
It could be the Husband Ex-Wife Awards. It's weird when I look at the list that you put together of the best picks for 2009. The only thing that you don't have in here, and the one movie that I would really consider the best movie of the year, is Up. Now, I'll quantify that because that's not what I picked for Best Picture, being that the movie that I found the most entertaining, the movie that touched me, was Up. That means I recognize that that's not going to be the same for everybody. I thought, overall, movie-wise for 2009, I was a little disappointed. If you were to say, what was your favorite movie last year without this list in front of me, I don't know if I could tell you a movie that came out last year.
Except for Avatar.
Probably the entire list would be Avatar and Star Trek. Avatar, because it was just incredible, and Star Trek, because I'm just a Star Trek geek.
Yes, Star Trek is on both of our lists for best movie, of course.
If you want to go to more in-depth in some of these movies, let me know. I'm just going to do a quick list. Movies that I enjoyed last year. Star Trek, Watchmen, Sherlock Holmes, Wolverine, Harry Potter. I mean, these are movies that I enjoyed. I found them entertaining. I'm glad I went to see them. That might be every movie I saw in the movie theater last year.
We aren't professional movie critics. We don't go to see everything that comes out. When we have to pay for our own tickets, we typically go to see something that we hope we're going to enjoy. If we don't think we're going to enjoy it, we don't go to see it. So it is literally a case of, if we saw it in the movie theater, there's a good chance it's going to be on our pick.
And sometimes we'll rip into a movie. I think we did a pretty nice thorough job of ripping on G.I. Joe. Didn't mean we didn't enjoy it, we just wanted to point out the flaws in it.
Every movie that I saw this year is not on my best pick list. Avatar, Hurt Locker, Star Trek, of course. As much as Watchmen got ripped, a new one, by a lot of people, I enjoyed it. And in fact, as much as it may be considered sacrilegious, I enjoyed the movie ending more than I enjoyed the comic book ending. It was more believable and realistic to me, which is kind of an odd thing to say about a comic book, but you can only suspend disbelief so much before it snaps.
I think it clearly was much more logical, and actually, in the sense of the movie, was more of a bookend. It really tied the movie together.
So I really enjoyed Watchmen. It wasn't necessarily in the same caliber as The Dark Knight, but it didn't mean that I didn't enjoy it. There were other movies that were fine, but they didn't jump out as best material. I enjoyed Sherlock Holmes. I enjoyed Wolverine. I enjoyed Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. I enjoyed The Proposal. I enjoyed The Blind Side. I enjoyed Inglourious Basterds. I enjoyed Up in the Air. But none of them really jumped out at me as, God, that was great. Oh, I want to go see that again. I want to memorize this movie.
I think I actually liked Watchmen better than you did. I consider that to be one of the greatest comic book movies ever made. It's a little bit unfair to compare Watchmen to the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, in as much as it's unfair to compare the Christopher Nolan Batman movies to the Tim Burton Batman movies. They are completely different genres. It's the same character, but shown from such different perspectives. And it's the same thing with Watchmen. The Watchmen just do not fit into the Christopher Nolan Batman universe. I think, really, Watchmen is equally entertaining, but completely different storytelling.
Oh, The Watchmen is so much more on an adult level compared to any other mainstream comic book movie that's been put out to date. But then again, The Watchmen comic book miniseries was so much more adult-oriented than anything that had come out before that time. But before this becomes Watchcast Part 2, let's move on to our worst movie picks. As I said, we don't get to see much in comparison to professional movie critics. So we tend to avoid the obviously bad ones, the ones that we're going to sit there and go, oh God, I'm going to get up in the middle of and walk out of.
Yes, I have not seen The Tooth Fairy despite the fact that my 7-year-old has.
That being said, sometimes we either have really bad movies forced upon us, or we go in the hopes that it will be a good movie and it turns out to be a real stinker. Or the third category for me is something that I went to that I had high hopes for and ended up being disappointed. It didn't even necessarily have to be a horrendous movie. It just fell far enough below the standard that I had set for it that I didn't enjoy it as much as I should have.
All right, that actually helps me make sense of your list, because you put Terminator Salvation under the worst picks for the year. Like, it wasn't that bad. But now that I hear you saying it was a movie that disappointed you, rather than necessarily being the worst movie of the year, makes a lot of sense to me. We've talked a lot about Jim Cameron and Avatar today. This is no Jim Cameron movie.
This is nowhere near a James Cameron movie. Honestly, I think Terminator Salvation would have been better if it hadn't been a Terminator movie. If it had just been a science fiction film about machines trying to take over the world and the rebel fighters who are fighting against it, I think this would have been a much better movie. I was disappointed because it wasn't a Terminator film.
I agree with you completely. As I said in our Terminator cast, the biggest problem that I had with this movie was about the Terminator named Marcus. This movie was not about John Connors. And if you were going to do that, you could have had any robot. It could have been iRobot, which would have been just as disappointing as Will Smith's iRobot. I didn't dislike it as bad as you did, but I agree with this was not as good as it could be. Heck, this was not even as good as McGee's previous films, the Charlie's Angels.
Oh, the Charlie's Angels films were so much better in comparison to this. They had nothing to do with the TV show, but at least there was a feel that they were trying.
But here's exactly the thing. Even though he did not make the Charlie's Angels television show, he was reverent to the show.
Yes. He said that he was reverent to the Terminator films, but you didn't feel the reverence.
So either he missed it or he lied.
Other films that made this list, Underworld, Rise of the Lycans, I blame you for that one. That is all your fault that I saw that. I was not a big fan of the other two Underworld movies to begin with, and this one, it was so much worse than they were, it wasn't even funny.
Alright, it was not as good as the first one, and not as bad as the second one. I loved Underworld. In genre movies, that's in my top 20 list. I love Underworld. Underworld Evolution was a piece of turd, and Rise of the Lycans was a shiny turd. No, it was not that bad.
Whereas for me, it's the stain that the turd leaves behind long after the turd has been dissolved. I am ashamed to admit that I started to watch Bride Wars on HBO only because it had Anne Hathaway in it, and I've kind of become an Anne Hathaway fan since Get Smart. That, and it was free, but it was so bad I had to shut it off halfway through. I am not the target audience for Bride Wars. And then, lastly, I've already hyped on this so much, I almost feel like I'm putting another bullet into the dead horse. But A Serious Man, typical Coen Brothers movie, and I hated it just like the rest.
Would you say that I'm not going to disagree with you?
You were the smart one. You haven't seen it yet. You knew it was a Coen Brothers film and decided, I'm not going to waste my 2 hours. So that pretty much rounds out our third annual Oscar cast. Tune in on March 7th on ABC to see the Academy Awards, to see how we did in comparison. We hope that you enjoyed listening to us ramble on about the movies of 2009.
As always, we thank you for listening to TwerpCast, and we encourage any feedback that you can provide. Please write Jim at twerponline.net. We can also be reached on Facebook, Zanga, and MySpace.
This has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2010.
And the Oscar goes to...